Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
One of the primary questions in the study of the JFK assassination is whether Lyndon Johnson was involved as a plotter. This question has become a wedge issue among the critical research community. For those who say Johnson is behind President Kennedy's assassination, what usually follows is evidence related to Malcolm Wallace, a mysterious man who, without a doubt, knew Lyndon Johnson and worked for him on occasion. Proponents of the LBJ did it theory rely on testimony from Billy Sol Estes about Wallace being LBJ's hitman, a fingerprint in the sixth-floor sniper's nest that allegedly matches Wallace's, and a show-stopping tape recording with what sounds like a confession from Cliff Carter about Mack Wallace's involvement in the JFK assassination. We'll get to the fingerprint and the tape in the next episode. In this episode, we cover Billy Sol Estes's 1984 grand jury testimony, the alleged LBJ kill list, the background of Mack Wallace, and Wallace's alleged involvement in the murder of USDA official Henry Marshall.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This morning resumed custody. The man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? The mission answers, he acted alone.
I'm lurking.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. By 1984, Billy Sol Estes was out of prison after having served a total of 10 years behind bars. During his incarceration, Estes remained in contact with Texas Ranger Clint Peoples, who convinced Estes to tell the world what he knew about the mysterious, still unsolved 1961 death of Henry Marshall. Estes had promised Ranger Peoples in 1979, as Peoples was transporting him to serve his second stint in prison, that he would solve Henry Marshall's death when he was released. Keeping his promise to Peoples, on March 20th, 1984, Billy Sol Estes once again entered the Robertson County Courthouse to speak to a grand jury about the death of Henry Marshall, just like he did in 1962. This time, however, Estes did not plead the Fifth Amendment. Instead, he answered many of the same questions that had been put to him in 1962, but this time with immunity from the prosecutor. Estes told the grand jury that the reason Henry Marshall was murdered was for fear that he would blow the whistle on Estes's cotton allotment scheme. According to Billy Sol, Marshall was killed on the orders of then-Vice President Lyndon Johnson, who was worried about being linked to Estes's fraud through Cliff Carter. Specifically, Estes said that Carter personally ordered Henry Marshall to approve 138 cotton allotment transfers as payback to Estes for campaign contributions. Estes said that, at first, Johnson suggested that Marshall be promoted out of Texas so that he was no longer a problem, but Marshall turned that promotion down. After that, Estes said that LBJ made the decision to kill Henry Marshall using his associate, Mac Wallace, as the hitman. Estes gives two different accounts of the details of how the assassination of Henry Marshall came to be. At the 1984 Texas grand jury, Estes said that sometime in late January 1961, he was in Washington for the inauguration. In the backyard of Lyndon Johnson's home, Estes spoke privately with Johnson, Cliff Carter, and Mac Wallace about the situation with Henry Marshall. Estes said it was at this point that Lyndon Johnson made the call to kill Marshall, and Carter assigned the job to Mac Wallace. On the other hand, in his 2005 autobiography, Billy Sol Estes, A Texas Legend, he says that in January of 1961, he did meet with Johnson, Carter, and Wallace, but they discussed the difficulty Marshall was causing for them and the idea of giving him a promotion to make him go away. In the autobiography, there's no mention of killing Henry Marshall during this January backyard Washington chat, as Estes told it in 2005. Instead, Estes's book says that he met with Cliff Carter in Bryan, Texas, in late May of 1961. At that time, Cliff Carter told Estes that Henry Marshall was about to go and meet with Bobby Kennedy in Washington, D.C. the next week. Carter said that LBJ asked him to take care of Marshall. Estes says that Carter then contacted Mac Wallace in California, and Wallace traveled to Texas to kill Henry Marshall. There is a lot of overlap in both versions of the story. Estes talks about a January backyard meeting in Washington with LBJ, Carter, and Wallace in both versions. The big variation is in exactly when the decision to kill Marshall using Mac Wallace was made. I honestly can't determine whether this inconsistency in the story is just confusion or if it's a sign that Estes may have been making the whole thing up. And therein lies a core issue with the Billy Sol Estes Mac Wallace story. The primary witness to it also happens to be a con man. We know that Billy Sol Estes would not hesitate to tell a lie. But throughout his career, most of his lies were for his own financial benefit or to protect himself. So the question is, why would Billy Sol Estes lie about LBJ ordering Mac Wallace to kill Henry Marshall? The fact that Estes had no obvious motive for lying here makes his story much more plausible. As Billy Sol's daughter Pam once said about her father, quote, "Even liars sometimes tell the truth." Estes told the grand jury that after the murder, Mac Wallace and Cliff Carter met with him at his home in Pecos. Wallace described waiting for Marshall at his ranch. Wallace said that there was an awful scuffle before he overwhelmed Marshall and put a plastic bag over his head and the exhaust pipe of Marshall's pickup truck. But while Wallace was in the process of poisoning Marshall, he heard a car coming and then panicked and shot Marshall 5 times with his own rifle. Unlike the first grand jury to look into Henry Marshall's death in 1962, the second grand jury in 1984 decided unanimously that Marshall was killed by someone else. The question of who killed Henry Marshall remained an open one. When Billy Sol Estes was released from prison in December of 1983, he still had parole restrictions and tax liens that he had to pay. Estes was hopeful that the information he had to offer the government about LBJ would eventually lead to a presidential pardon. After testifying at the Robertson County Grand Jury, Estes retained attorney Doug Caddy to help him get a pardon from Ronald Reagan. Caddy had previously been the lawyer for CIA agent E. Howard Hunt during Watergate. Estes said that Caddy was retained because he was a Republican and Estes had a long history of being a Democrat. Caddy determined that the best course of action for Estes to get a pardon would be to contact the attorney in charge of the criminal division of the Justice Department, Stephen Trott. Incidentally, Trott worked on the 1975 reinvestigation of the murder of Robert F. Kennedy when he was a deputy district attorney in Los Angeles. That probably is a coincidence, but it's worth noting for the record. After several phone calls and letters, Assistant Attorney General Trott asked for Estes to put in writing exactly what evidence he had to offer. On August 9, 1984, Caddy responded to Trott with this letter. Quote, Mr. Estes was a member of a four-member group headed by Lyndon Johnson, which committed criminal acts in Texas in the 1960s. The other two, besides Mr. Estes and LBJ, were Cliff Carter and Mack Wallace. Mr. Estes is willing to disclose his knowledge concerning the following criminal offenses. Murders. 1. The killing of Henry Marshall. 2. The killing of George Krutalek. 3. The killing of Ike Rogers and his secretary. 4. The killing of Harold Orr. 5. The killing of Coleman Wade. 6. The killing of Josepha Johnson. 7. The killing of John Kinzer. And 8. The killing of President J.F. Kennedy. Mr. Estes is willing to testify that LBJ ordered these killings and that he transmitted his orders through Cliff Carter to Mack Wallace, who executed the murders. The letter goes on to say that, quote, Mr. Estes states that Mack Wallace, whom he describes as a stone killer with a communist background, recruited Jack Ruby, who in turn recruited Lee Harvey Oswald. Mr. Estes says that Cliff Carter told him that Mack Wallace fired a shot from the grassy knoll in Dallas, which hit JFK from the front during the assassination. Estes said that his personal knowledge that LBJ ordered all of these murders came from meetings that he had with Cliff Carter and Mack Wallace after each killing. Caddy also told the DOJ that Estes had tape recordings of certain conversations, quote, as a means of Carter and Estes protecting themselves should LBJ order their deaths. Attorney Trott at the Justice Department responded to Caddy's letter on September 13th by saying that if any errors were found in Estes' testimony, the government's promise of immunity for his statements would be null and void. Shortly after receiving this letter, Estes decided to stop talking to the DOJ. According to him, he didn't break off the presidential pardon negotiations because of the threat of being prosecuted if he lied. Instead, Estes said that after a meeting with the DOJ had been set at a hotel in Abilene, he received calls from his Italian friends who told him that if he went through with the meeting, his life would end. When Estes didn't show up, the DOJ sent him a frustrated letter in November of 1984 that precluded any chance of further discussions. Estes's attorney, Doug Caddy, confirmed to author Joan Mellon in January of 2006 that Billy Sol Estes never provided him with any evidence that confirmed his accusations. Caddy told Mellon that he was, quote, messed up by Billy Sol Estes. The 1984 grand jury testimony and the DOJ letter seeking a presidential pardon both raise a lot of questions. If what Estes said is true, it would change the contemporary understanding of American history, But you have to admit that it doesn't look good for Estes that he walked away from talking to the feds when he had a chance to come clean and get immunity. Then again, it's also likely that Estes had mob connections and not beyond belief that someone could have told him not to talk. This episode of Solving JFK is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code JFK. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. They found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Best of all, not only is every product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, you can get 20% off of your first order with code JFK. So head on over to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches the mood you're looking for. 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code JFK. The claims from Billy Sol Estes rely heavily on longtime Johnson aide Cliff Carter and a man named Mac Wallace. We've already established that Estes had a very close relationship with Carter. So who, then, was Mac Wallace? From a young age, Mac Wallace was an overachiever. He was the quarterback of the club football team at the University of Texas. More importantly, he was elected the president of the student body in 1944, about 8 years after John Connally held the same position. After graduating from the University of Texas, Wallace attended Columbia University in New York to pursue a doctorate in economics, which he never finished. Wallace went on to work at a steamship company and a bank before going back to Austin to get his master's in economics from the University of Texas. He then worked as an economics professor at Long Island University's Brooklyn campus and later at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Around this time, Cliff Carter, Wallace's friend from college, introduced him to one of LBJ's attorneys, Ed Clark. Wallace then worked on Johnson's 1948 Senate campaign without formally joining his staff. In 1949, Johnson returned the favor by having Cliff Carter get Wallace a job as an economist for the Department of Agriculture in Washington. According to Texas journalist Holland McCombs, once Wallace was working at the USDA, he traveled to Texas doing odd jobs for Senator Johnson. One of Wallace's jobs for LBJ was strong-arming small businesses to pay a cut of their federal loan proceeds to Lyndon Johnson. In 1947, Mac Wallace married a woman named Mary Andre Barton, who went by Andre. While Wallace was in Washington, Andre stayed in Austin with their small children. One of Wallace's jobs, according to Johnson aide Horace Busby, was to, quote, rein in Josepha Johnson, Lyndon's alcoholic troublemaking sister. This assignment led to Wallace spending a lot of time with Lyndon Johnson's sister and eventually having an affair with her from 1949 until 1951. During the same time that Wallace was sleeping with Josepha Johnson, she began to date John Kinzer when she was back in Austin. Then, in the summer of 1951, Kinzer began an affair with Mack Wallace's wife, Andre. Yes, you heard that right. John Kinzer, a man Wallace had never met, was sleeping with Mack Wallace's mistress and his wife. With the knowledge of these affairs in his mind, Mack Wallace drove to the Pitch and Putt golf course on the afternoon of October 22, 1951. He went to the pro shop and ordered a pack of cigarettes from Kinzer, who was working the cash register. As Kinzer was ringing up the sale, Wallace shot and killed him at point-blank range in front of several witnesses, one of whom took down Wallace's license plate number as he fled. When Wallace was arrested, he told the police, quote, "I work for Johnson. That's why I have to get back to Washington." Mack Wallace was bailed out of jail by Lyndon Johnson attorney Ed Clark. At first, Wallace's primary lawyer was Polk Shelton, who worked for the Duke of Duval, George Parr, and was involved in Johnson's 1948 Senate campaign. Eventually, LBJ's go-to criminal defense lawyer, John Cofer, was hired to represent Wallace. If you're keeping score, that's three lawyers closely connected to Lyndon Johnson so far. The jury found Wallace guilty of murder, but recommended a suspended sentence of only 5 years. The suspended sentence meant that Wallace would not have to serve any time in prison, and that if he could avoid racking up another felony over the next 5 years, the murder conviction would later be expunged from Wallace's record. Researcher Glenn Sample spoke to one of the Mack Wallace jurors, who told him that each one of the jurors had been threatened, including men who came to the front door with guns pointed at them, telling them to, quote, "be careful about your decision." Some of the jurors later called John Kinzer's parents to apologize for the suspended sentence, saying that they had no choice because their families had been threatened. The selection of attorneys alone in the Kinzer trial makes it clear that Lyndon Johnson had some involvement in coordinating Mack Wallace's defense. The fact that the jurors were threatened would also support the idea that Johnson's team was backing Mack Wallace. On the other hand, Wallace had to borrow money from his family to pay his lawyers. LBJ did not cover the legal fees. But given what we know about Lyndon Johnson, we really wouldn't expect him to. Once Wallace was able to go free as a convicted murderer, he left the USDA and began to work for defense industry contractors. He worked briefly for John Coe Aircraft Corporation in Oklahoma before taking a longer-term position at the Texas Engineering and Manufacturing Company, also known as TEMCO. TEMCO, a contractor for the Navy and Air Force, was owned by David Harold Byrd, a strong supporter of LBJ, who would go on to purchase the Texas Schoolbook Depository Building. In February of 1961, Wallace left TEMCO to go work for Ling Electronics, which had merged with TEMCO. Its owner, James Ling, was friends with Johnson and donated $250,000 to the 1960 Kennedy-Johnson ticket. James Ling claimed that he did not know Malcolm Wallace. In a September 1962 memo, the Office of Naval Intelligence Screening Board unanimously denied Mack Wallace's request for a security clearance at Ling Electronics because of his prior murder conviction, a 1959 allegation from Wallace's ex-wife that Wallace had raped his 9-year-old daughter, and a 1961 conviction of Wallace for public intoxication. Despite the findings of the ONI screening board, Mack Wallace was still given the requested security clearance. Texas Ranger Clint Peoples, who investigated the Kinzer murder, was interviewed about Wallace by the Office of Naval Intelligence as part of this process. When Peoples asked who could be so strong in politics to give this guy a clearance, he was told, quote, "The vice president." We've established with certainty that Mack Wallace murdered John Kinzer. But that wasn't a professional hit. It was a revenge killing due to a love triangle, or quadrangle in this case. For most researchers, a prerequisite to the idea that Mack Wallace was involved in killing President Kennedy is that Wallace was the assassin of Henry Marshall, which would demonstrate that he was willing to kill for LBJ. So what does the evidence say about Wallace's involvement in the Henry Marshall murder? Aside from what Billy Sol Estes said in his 1984 grand jury testimony, there are some other facts in support of Mack Wallace as Marshall's killer. During the original Marshall grand jury in 1962, local gas station attendant Nolan Griffin testified that someone stopped by the station around the time of Marshall's death and asked where the Marshall farm was located. That same man came back the next day and said, quote, "You gave me the wrong Marshall, but that's all right. I got my deer lease." Griffin remembered this man a year later because it was so rare to see strangers in town. According to Griffin, the man drove a 1958 or 1959 Plymouth or Dodge station wagon, which is the same type of car that Wallace drove, according to author Philip Nelson. The man wore dark-rimmed glasses, had dark hair, and a scarred, dark face. A Texas Ranger sketch artist drew a facial sketch of the man, which does appear to resemble Mack Wallace. Griffin, the gas station attendant, would later sign an affidavit that said the man he saw was another man whose name was not released, not Mack Wallace. However, Griffin said that he was given the document by his friend, Sheriff Stiegel, so he signed it without looking at it, and he does not agree that he identified some other man. The unidentified man was never charged. Nolan Griffin received threatening phone calls around this time warning him to, quote, "keep an eye on his children and watch what he said." So there is evidence that on the day Marshall was killed, a man who looked similar to Mack Wallace and drove the same type of car stopped at the local gas station asking for directions to the Marshall farm. But there are also arguments advanced by author Joan Mellon in her book Faustian Bargains that, if true, make it impossible for Wallace to be Henry Marshall's killer. Mack Wallace had moved to California in February of 1961. According to a 1984 Texas newspaper article, we know that Wallace was in California on June 1st, 1961. 2 days before the Marshall murder, because he filled out a portion of his security access renewal paperwork that day. According to what Wallace's brother Harold told the Dallas Morning News, Wallace had a rock-solid alibi. Wallace's brother and his family arrived in California on June 2nd and stayed at Wallace's home. Mack Wallace could not have been in Texas killing Henry Marshall on June 3rd because he was at the beach in California all day with his son Michael and his brother Harold and his children. Wallace's son Michael later reiterated the same story to Joan Mellon. As you just heard, we have arguments on both sides. For me, the alibi from Wallace's brother and son, as well as the date on his security renewal application, have more evidentiary weight than the evidence supporting Wallace's guilt, which is really just Estes's story plus the somewhat matching vehicle and artist rendering from the gas station attendant. On the other hand, as you'll soon hear, Billy Sol Estes mentioned Mack Wallace and the Henry Marshall shooting specifically in a recorded conversation allegedly with LBJ aide Cliff Carter, which tends to support the idea that Mack Wallace was involved in the murder of Henry Marshall. Next time on Solving JFK, we continue to study Mack Wallace's role in the assassination of President Kennedy as we focus on a sniper's nest fingerprint that is alleged to match Wallace and a recently unearthed tape recording of Billy Sol Estes and Cliff Carter that names Wallace as the assassin of President Kennedy. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.